Pesach and in honor of a new sefer that I got, instead of doing something just from our usual text of Alei Shor, I want to share with you a beautiful idea from this incredible sefer which I just got called Oz Yashir on Pesach. It's part of, I think it's volume 4 in a series of Sfarim that are put out about the Yomim Tovim. I have the other volumes as well, which was excellent, and I was happy to get the newest volume on Pesach. And I want to share with you ideas, which again, you have the text in the PDF that I sent out to the group.
Who's the author?
Moshe Schwert. He's a lawyer from New York.
Moshe?
Yes, Moshe.
His first name.
No. Schwert. Not Shore. Look through the Torah and then you'll get the name. Anyway. Okay. So, in this beautiful Sefer Oz Yashir, again, you have the PDF in the WhatsApp group. I want to share with you a piece that he has, or I'm putting it together really, two different makoros that he quotes, which deal with the following paradox, which I think is really quite fascinating and quite profound, and I think very, very relevant. And the paradox is as follows, that on the one hand, there are certain people, if we think about Cheirus and Geula, which of course are the obvious themes of Pesach, a lot of people, on the one hand, don't feel a need for any of that. In other words, they don't feel like they're in Golos. You know, this is the typical Golos Jew doesn't feel like they're in Golos. That's kind of the irony of the phrase, a Golos Jew, right? They don't necessarily feel like they're Golos. Again, and it's not even necessarily people's fault always. You're used to what you're used to. If you grew up your whole life, especially if you grew up in a comfortable environment, so for people to feel the benefit of freedom of going to Golos L'Cheirus, if you didn't feel like you're really in Golos, you know, Pesach is hard in that sense. Paradoxically, there's a second type of person for whom it can be just the opposite, which is they feel so mired in Golos. They feel so distant. You know, another year we're going to say, Afal Pishi Yisma Meya, another year we're going to say, Lashana Hava. Come on. They can't get into it because they feel so stuck in Golos. So those are really two opposite type of personalities. The truth is that sometimes they both inhabit us at different times, were complex, and it's addressing these two paradoxical, almost opposite phenomenon that I want to share with you two beautiful sources. I am indebted to the Sefer because he exposed me to both of them. One is a drasha of the Tzlach, and then the second one is a comment, a long essay by the Nesivos in his beautiful Haggadah, which I actually do own at home, called the Maisa Nisim. So if you take a look at the first PDF, again, for those who have it in on their WhatsApp group, we start off with the drasha of the Tzlach. It's Drush Mem Beis, L'Chag HaPesach, and he's addressing that first issue of how is it that, you know, how do we get in touch with, or how can we understand even, forget the solution, just how do we understand the problem of, you know, not able to really appreciate, you know, Cheirus, Geula, can't really feel stuck in Golos or in Avdus. So he starts off by describing what the Egyptians did to the Jews, but then he explains very practically, very quickly, how this relates to us, and he explains with it an interesting anomaly in the Seder, which once you hear the question, it should bother all of us, but I'm not sure how many of us even noticed the problem to begin with. So he starts off with the following. Hamitzrim hirshuas bnei Yisrael. We know, of course, the Yamaras chayehem, the Egyptians made our lives miserable when you were in Egypt. But Amnam, he points out, okay, now right away he's going into the analysis. Harosha, first he's discussing wickedness, which is also relevant to all of us, and then I'll discuss the issue of freedom versus feeling enslaved. Harosha, b'odo birusho, eno margish b'mriros chayav, b'klipa m'matekes lo ha'avera. Right, the nature is, if somebody is totally in his avera moment, someone is, you know, in their, again, when I would say rebellion, but sometimes it's just the way you were brought up, so you're not really rebelling against anything. You're just living your life. Your very, very fun, good life. You're very, very distant from halacha. You're very, very distant from kedusha kind of life. When you're in the moment, when you're in your rishus, you don't really feel that it's, you don't feel that it's rishus. That's the nature of the experience. What he calls, again, he uses a Kabbalistic term, a kalipa that's memateket. But the point is, there's something about that, let's be honest, that's memateket. It sweetens it. It's a sweet life. There's something enjoyable about that life, and therefore you don't really feel that it's so bad. So when does a Russia, ironically, when does he first realize how bad he was? But only kishe harasha matchil loshuv b'tshuva oz toim tam misa l'mafreya margish memrios chayav. As we can say, the Mashiach get it from the yeshiva, or we can sometimes, you know, be talking to our children or something about how, you know, there's a more beautiful life out there, there's a more meaningful, enriched. But when they're not there yet, they don't see what was empty or vacuous about, or we don't see what's empty or vacuous to what we're doing. Ironically, only once we make the U-turn and we get a taste, a little bit of what tshuva is, only then, l'mafreya, do we realize what we were missing. Right? Again, it's, on the one hand, it's very deep. On the other hand, it's, once you say it, it's obvious. It resonates with all of us in many different parallel experiences. You know, I'll give you just a simple example for anyone who's had a yeshiva experience, right? Again, I'm not picking on any particular community you grew up in, any shul you grew up in, right? But that first time you have the yeshiva Rosh Hashanah, the yeshiva Yom Kippur, you might have enjoyed Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur davening your whole life in your shul. The second you have, you know what it's like to be in a yeshiva Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you're like, oh, yeah, we didn't have that growing up. That was not what I had. Right? That's one example, mine elef. Right? When you experience something really deep and profound, all of a sudden it's like, oh, now I know what I didn't have. When you don't have it, you don't appreciate. You feel like you have whatever you have. Right? That's the note of Yehuda's insight when it comes to the moral dimension. Okay. So now you skip to the next paragraph. He says, similarly, it has to do with suffering. And for this, to address the suffering issue, and therefore our celebration of Pesach, now he addresses, again, this simple anomaly, the simple idiosyncrasy of the Seder, which again, I have myself probably never thought about until he brought it up, and I'm embarrassed because it's such an obvious good question. He says, there's a certain shinui in the Seder. There's something wrong in the order of our Seder, right? After we have the long Magid, then we have, I'm not going to sing for you, don't worry, Motzi Matzah, Maror Korech Shulchan Orech. Right? Matzah comes before Maror. Says, why are we doing that? Hare Hashibud Haya Hatchila. What came first experientially? First, the Egyptians made our lives miserable. They enslaved us, the Maror. Then we ran out. We ran out so fast, the bread didn't have time to rise. We have matzah. So really, what should come first? Maror should be before matzah. Acher kacha gula. Lama karam pesach matzah. Sheheim zecha legula. Lamor she zecha leshibud. It's not only in the order that we do the Seder. We even say Rabbi Gamliel Omer. Three things. Pesach matzah umarer. Again, marer is the last one. It should be the first one. So says the tzlach. Again, this is the note of Yehuda in his drashos. Aval darkeinu necha. Kedem dekodam tchilas hagula. Lohir gishu b'mriras chayehem. Which we know from other sources. Right? And this is, you know, the whole Stockholm effect. And you know, people adapt. 210 years in Avdus, the only way you're going to survive is if you convince yourself you're really not in Avdus. It ain't so bad. They didn't, at some point, they didn't realize how bad it was. When did they truly appreciate how bad it had been? Only once they went free. Only once they had a taste of true freedom could they then appreciate how bad it had been. Only after the Pesach and the Matzah, achar kach higishu b'mrirus hashibud shel hanefesh. And therefore, that's why we do matzah. Only once we've tasted the matzah can we appreciate how bitter the marah really was. And then he adds with a twist, which is really beautiful, a really homiletical drush, a twist. And that's also shot very deeply in Hillel, right? The other Amoraim said you have your steak, then you have a little bit of the lafa, and you dip it into your dip. You have your Pesach, and then you have your matzah and your marah. We know Hillel had a different practice. Hillel made an Eish Tanur. Hillel wrapped it all together. Hillel ate it all together. What's the symbolism of Hillel eating it all together? As in Rabbi Yehuda, he was just taking this very point one step further. V'zeh rimeis Hillel hazakein, she'korech matzu umor b'yachad, lomar she'hamatzav hamor ha'yukruchim yachad, beis ha'gu'ula hirgishu hamarirus. Right? It's not just that it's not just sequential that only after we have a little bit of ge'ula we appreciate the maror. It's that, as we know, life is complex, and often we are experiencing both simultaneously. It can be the best of times and the worst of times at the same time. But it's only when we have a little bit of that taste of Pesach, only a little bit of taste of matzah, do we even appreciate that the maror was so bitter to begin with. And this is, you know, we spent 20 minutes just on this point, but I want to get to a second point. But this is really so resonant because, again, there's religious dimensions, there's stam, just human life applications of this. You know, when you're in the thick of something, you know, it's very hard to really appreciate it. That's why you need to sometimes zoom out You need to have a different experience in order, you know, shift your perspective, get yourself literally sometimes even to a physically different place in order so that you should actually be able to fully appreciate, whether it's good or bad, what you had to begin with. And again, I would think that this is the, he doesn't say this, but the opposite, of course, is also true, right? Which is you don't know how good you have it until you lose it. Right? It's only when freedom is taken away you appreciate how much it was good, or again, freedom and can be analogized with and many other positive experiences. And so when you're in the good moments, whether it's in a good marriage or with your children, you take it for granted. It's only in the moments of difficulty and distance and crisis that you appreciate how good it was. So he's coming at it from the opposite perspective. But all of this is going on. Again, this is just a great little experience just to even appreciate the Seder, HaDvarim at the Seder, why we do the matzah before the maror. And I think it's just a profound insight. Again, he's addressing one type of person, the person who can't really appreciate Pesach because they don't appreciate how bad it was to begin with. I have a good life. And he's now this helps us understand the challenge. Okay? Now, again, he's not saying, nor would I say the solution would be in your everyday life to find some miserable experience so that you can appreciate the good. But if you try to just even intellectually conceptualize the process, why is this so hard? I think he helps explain it in a very, very meaningful way. Now, again, for those who have the PDF, I'm going to turn to the second and third sheets that I posted. And this is coming from the Haggadah's Maisa Nisim. Right, Rav Yaakov Milisa, who is most well known for his brilliant chidushim on Choshen Mishpat and Shulchan Aruch, the Nesivas HaMishpat. So he has a beautiful Haggadah, which I have at home, called Maisa Nisim. But again, it's also quoted here in this wonderful Sefer Oz Yashir. And he is addressing, again, this is my take on it, but in a sense, almost the exact opposite a problem. And that is people who are so weighed down by the fact that, you know, this gullus just doesn't seem to ever end. When I was literally a baby, my grandfather died. I don't really have any memory of him, my father's father. But some years later, I can't remember, it was 8, 9, 10, I can't remember, my grandmother got remarried. So for my younger sisters, only know my quote-unquote step-grandfather, and I had a 20-plus year relationship, more with my grandfather. My grandmother and her second husband are since both passed, but we called him Grandpa Herman. That was my grandmother's second husband, Grandpa Herman. And he was a yekka in every possible cliche. Check every box of what it means to be a yekka. Like, he was in Washington Heights before he married my grandmother and moved to New Jersey. But, like, Washington Heights was in him. Okay, every possible box for good, l'tov u'l'mutav, he was a yekka. But he was also in the penimius and just in the simplest way, like the firmest person maybe I ever met. Or just mamash amayim. A simple, you know, amayim. And he used to ask me all the time, he would watch, I don't know if it was always Fox News, but it was often Fox News. The world, again, this is going back even 15, 20 years ago. It's terrible in Israel, it's terrible in America. And he, you know, because then I became the family rabbi. You know, I was in Smicha at the time. Maybe I had like 3 years of learning on a rabbi. Oh, anyway, David, when's Mashiach going to come? We would sit down. It's like, can you just pass the toast? It's like, you know, we went from 0 to 60 very fast often in the conversation. But it was like almost every time I would go there for Shabbos. You know, before I was married, I was single in YU. My grandmother and her husband lived in Englewood. It's right over the bridge. I used to go there all the time. And it was like almost every conversation, dude, what's going to be? When's Mashiach going to come? When's this all going to end? Right? So there are people like that. Most of us don't live in that place. But there are people who live in that place. And his point is, as we'll get to in a second, the Nesivos is discussing, for people like that, the Haggadah or the Seder or Pesach is hard because you can't, what are we celebrating? Look around. Where's the Karban Pesach? Where's Mashiach? Where's the Beis Hamikdash? It still stinks. It's the opposite of the first person we were describing who can't understand what the problem is. Everything's so good. How can I appreciate tomorrow? I just have... Okay, so to this, the Nesivos is specifically asking a number of questions. He's trying to understand Halach Ma'anya. In our family, we sing that too, but again, I'll spare you. I'm better at harmonies than a solo. Let's just put it that way. That's a charitable way of describing my voice. So he asks a number of questions about Halach Ma'anya. Why is it in Aramaic? Why do we refer, Dafka, in this paragraph to the matzah as the lach ma'anya, the bread of affliction, the lechem oni? Many famous people ask, you know, we ask, kol dichven yesev yecha, anyone who's hungry, anyone who's needy, come into our house, kol ditzrich, really, in your house with the door closed, everyone already dressed around the table, that's when you're inviting people? When you're ready in the hotel, which you're not inviting anyone who can't pay all the thousands of dollars to come, that's when you're inviting poor people to come to your table? The whole thing seems to be a little bit of a joke. Again, these are all questions that different Mefarshim, different Bali Haggadah ask. The Nesiva asks them all. And if you have in the original, again, in this Sefer, he doesn't give you the whole piece. But in the PDF that I gave you from the original, I give you the whole piece. I think almost the whole piece. And he asks like 5 or 6 or 7 questions all about Halach Ma'anya. And the basic jumping springboard, which if I remember correctly, I think he's quoting from the Rambam, is he has the following assertion, that Halach Ma'anya was instituted only after the Churban Bayis Rishon, only after the Jews were already in Golus, and during the time of Bayis Sheni, they didn't say it. It's not an inviolable part of the Haggadah. It's not one of the 3 things you have to say in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Sibur Tzias Mitzrayim. It's not Pesach, Matzah, Tzomar. It's a paragraph. And it's a paragraph that's a miyuad for Golus. Now, why? What's the point? So he explains, he starts off with, again, I don't think you have this somewhere in there, but just for the sake of time, I'll say it outside, then we'll read 1 or 2 things inside. He gives the following analogy. He says, let's say somebody was in jail, and they got out of jail. So the anniversary, let's say, of their day of freedom, they're going to celebrate that all the time. That's going to be amazing. But let's say years later, now they're back in jail for a long stretch, maybe even a life sentence. All those years they were free, but they would celebrate because on June 22nd, or whatever, September 2nd, I had gotten out. But now, years later, when they're in jail again, are they going to be celebrating the fact that 20 years ago I got out on June 22nd? It's not a meaningful day anymore. They're back in jail, right? It's not exciting at all. Right? I'll give you an analogy. God forbid, Rahman al-Islam, in sickness, right? A person who was going through serious cancer treatments, right? And they got to ring that bell, as they do in all the hospitals. When you finish the chemo, you ring the bell, and now you're in, you're in remission for a while. You think back to that moment as a thrill. If Rahman al-Islam, the disease comes back, and now it's years later and you're suffering, are you still celebrating the date that in my first wave, the first time I got diagnosed 7 years ago, I was, all of a sudden, the doctor had told me I was cancer-free, but I'm not cancer-free now. So that date becomes meaningless. Right? I think that's a very, very powerful metaphor. It's not mine, it's the Nesivus's. He gives the jail one. I'm just giving a contemporary example, let's say, of, since I'm assuming that no one at the moment here in the room is in jail ever. So, hopefully we haven't been sick either, but we can relate more to the sickness mashal. So that's the Nesivus's mashal. Why is he asking, what's the purpose of that mashal? To ask the question or to explain, why are we celebrating Yetzias Mitzrayim? Yes, we were delivered. But as he puts it poetically, Akate Avde Achashverosh Anan. But now we're back in jail. Now we're back in Golus. So what's the fact that originally we got out, but now we're back in Golus? If the original Geula maintained its momentum, it's on the anniversary that good thing happened. We'd always celebrate. But now we're back Shreklach again. Now it's terrible again. We're in Golus. It's horrible. So what are we celebrating? The fact that in a different lifetime, this used to be a good day. Now all days are bad. It's a very, very powerful question. So what's his answer? So he answers as follows. He says, what if we just tweak the mashal differently? And say, let's say that when we got out that first time, it was done in such a way in which we were given absolute confidence that if the situation would ever repeat itself, we'd be able to get out again as well. Now, that's not true, I mean, unless you had, not in a really, really realistic way, in our sickness, mashal, let's say. But he says, the jailer or the king or whoever who got you out the first time had promised you that if you ever get into jail again, don't worry, just like I'm getting you out now, my word, you have it on my life, on my daughter's life, on my mother's life, I'll get you out again. So then each time they have the anniversary, even though it's not benefiting me anymore, I'm back in jail, says the Nesivus, but the anniversary of that time I went out gives me hope. Because just like I went out the first time, I can go out the second time as well. I'll read a little bit inside. He says, "Mikom makom imachmas hayetzia harishona muftach beberur blishum safek shigam achshav bavari yetzei." If something about the first freedom guarantees that whenever there will be a repeat, we'll become free again, then bavari shasimcha ruuya ba vein simcha gedola mizu al yetzia shavra. Says that's in the analogy, and he says similarly when it comes to Mitzrayim. When we left Egypt, right? Why do we dafka make that statement at the end of Halach Ma'anya? Because it's that haftacha which is what gives Pesach meaning. Ninu lo yidbarach la'am. Because when Hashem freed us from Mitzrayim, it wasn't a random thing. The governor, you know, gave clemency, pardoned us, and we went out. It was more, and this definitely isn't in the book, don't blame, like the Princess Bride. Right? You know, you saved my life. You know, we're tied together forever. I'm Diego Montoya. Whatever, okay, his name was. Okay. So now there's a relationship forever. When Hashem freed us, He didn't stomp free us, you know, like, you know, the governor giving clemency or giving a pardon. He says, you're mine now. I got you. And if it ever happened again, He'll get us again. He'll have our back again. And His greatness. And you'll say, but what if we're not worth it? What if we don't deserve it? Who said we always deserved it? Who said we deserved it in Mitzrayim? As Moshe argues powerfully and successfully to Hashem in the Midbar, don't do it for you. Don't do it for us, excuse me. Do it for you. So whether it's for our benefit or Hashem's benefit, now that He's tied to us, He's a parent. Just like He got us out the first time, He's not letting us go the second time. He's not letting us go the second time either. It's in Aramaic because the whole... why Dafka this paragraph in Aramaic? Because the whole paragraph was intended for the people once they went into Golos Bavel. That's when it was written. It was written because people had a hard time experiencing the Seder. Why should we have hope? Again, another year in Golos, another year without a Beis HaMikdash, another year. And the answer was, that's exactly, and we're not really inviting people, and this many Mepharshim say in their own way, right? It's not a real invitation, right? If it would be a real invitation, it'd be a really poor invitation. But, you know, the time to invite guests is not when you're sitting ready at the Seder. But rather, when you're really, really happy and excited, so the natural thing is you would want to express it. You want to share it with other people. It's a way of formulating our confidence and our optimism that we really just got, you know, maybe we had a long year. Maybe it's been a long, hard year since last we sat down at the Seder, right? I mean, unfortunately, current events have made it that we're going to go into Pesach this year with, you know, the worst string of terrorist attacks, you know, in a very short succession in a while, right? Maybe people aren't necessarily going to be in the mood to sit down. So we remind ourselves in the Aramaic, just like Hashem took us out the first time, again, we don't know when, my grandfather's still asking, Duvid, when is it going to be? And I was like, Grandpa, I don't know. If I knew, I would tell you, I told him. But you know, I wouldn't be one of those people who kept it to myself. I'm like one of those women who won't give you the right recipe. I wouldn't change. I would share the recipe if I had it, you know. But I don't have it. I don't know. But we have full confidence. That's the bet. Halach Ma'anya is restoring our confidence. It's a statement of faith. Just, but again, not blind faith. Not blind faith. I know He can do it because He did do it. And the relationship that was created is ongoing. And therefore, Dafka, when we need it the most, when we're in Golos, so to speak, physically and emotionally, in the language of Golos, in the language of Aramaic, we remind ourselves of the original freedom, which is what gives us hope that if He did it once, He can do it again. All right.